Dr. William Luther Pierce, the year 2000. How to bring down the house.
Hello. This first day of a new millennium is perhaps a good time for me to respond to a letter from a listener, Alfred D., who wrote to me last week to express his appreciation for American dissident voices. He especially appreciates the information about crimes committed against white people by non-whites, information which is suppressed by the controlled media because it doesn't fit their politically correct agenda, an agenda which requires keeping white people feeling guilty and apologetic. And he adds that such information leaves him, quote, feeling powerless to do anything but feel bad about all of it, end quote. Mr. D. then goes on to ask, and again I quote, what can we ever do to rid our culture of the Jewish stranglehold on our media and the liberal hold on our institutions? It seems like we can't do much without wealthy and wise people at the top, like our founders 2 centuries ago, who will stand up and seize the reins of our republic to restore order and decency to our communities, end quote. I quoted from Mr. D's letter not because it is exceptional in any way, but rather because it is typical of many letters I receive. People tell me, hey, I've really learned a lot from your broadcasts. I understand much better now what's going on. But what can I do about it? I'm frustrated and angry, but how can I help to fix things? It just seems that the Jews and their friends are too powerful. Well, before I begin answering this question of Mr. D and of many other listeners, let me discuss with you a couple of recent news items which are relevant to the question. One of them I'm sure you've already heard a great deal about. It's the uproar that came from the media when Atlanta Braves pitcher John Rocker made a few frank comments to the magazine Sports Illustrated. Rocker, who is a native of Georgia, expressed his dislike for New York City. He said that riding the subway in New York, one finds oneself crammed in with all sorts of alien and distasteful people. Freaks with purple hair, homosexuals with AIDS, black criminals just out of jail for the umpteenth time, welfare moms surrounded by their swarms of brats. And he also said, quote, the biggest thing I don't like about New York are the foreigners. You can walk an entire block in Times Square and not hear anybody speaking English. Asians and Koreans and Vietnamese and Indians and Russians and Spanish people and everything up there. How the hell did they get in this country? End quote. Hey, you know, I've felt like that every time I've had to go to New York City. The subways are like a freak show. Times Square is like a freak show. New York is a disgusting and depressing place. And you know what? Millions, and I mean millions, of other white Americans feel the same way about it John Rocker and I do. I mean, let's face it. New York City is a disgusting place. It's filthy, degenerate, perverse, and above all else, alien. There's nothing American about it. If I had the power to nuke the place, make a huge, self-illuminated glass parking lot out of the place, I wouldn't hesitate for a second. So anyway, what happened to John Rocker when he simply expressed an opinion shared by millions of other white Americans? The Jews went berserk. Rocker was talking about their city. He was saying that he didn't like all of the wonderful diversity and multiculturalism they have worked so hard to bring to New York, to make New York the sort of place they can feel comfortable in, like a Middle Eastern bazaar. And so the Jews trotted out all of their Gentile auxiliaries, their feminists and their queers and their liberals and their bought politicians, starting with Mayor Giuliani, to demand that Rocker be punished. Get rid of him, demanded the terminally liberal Gentile sports editor of the Atlanta Constitution, Mark Bradley. The Rocker story was the biggest thing in the news last week. Why? A baseball player says in public what everyone knows is true, and the Jews and everyone in their camp demand that he be banned from his profession and ostracized by all politically correct Americans. From the hateful tenor of their denunciations of him, I suspect that many of them would like to see him crucified in Times Square. Again, why? Well, I'll tell you why. It's because the Jews have built a house of cards, and they are afraid that someone will breathe on it too hard, and it will come tumbling down. If John Rocker had said something patently false, such as announcing that the earth is flat, or if he had expressed a personal dislike for his fellow white Southerners, say, then no one would have made a fuss, even though he is a celebrity, and so his publicly expressed views might conceivably have led some kids to believe that the earth is flat or to develop an irrational hatred for Southerners. But he said something which everyone knows is true, and he said he doesn't like it, and the Jews demanded his head. You see, we're all supposed to pretend that we like it. We're all supposed to pretend that we think diversity is a wonderful thing. We're all supposed to pretend that we really appreciate the opportunity to ride the subway next to a queer with AIDS, or a black thug with dreadlocks, or a welfare mom with a horde of pickaninnies. We're supposed to pretend that we find it a culturally enriching experience to walk through Times Square and not see anyone who looks like us or hear anyone speaking English. Because if we don't pretend, then others may stop pretending too, and the house of cards will come tumbling down. It's like the child in the crowd of spectators who says out loud, "But Mommy, the emperor is naked." The salient point here is that the Jews and their dependents know that their whole existence is built on lies, that it depends on make-believe for its continuation. The feminists and the queers and the welfare rabble and the non-whites also know that, despite their apparent facade of strength, despite their voting majority, their position is very precarious. They know that they haven't earned their privileged position in our society. They know that it is artificial, a device of smoke and mirrors, and that if we decide to stop supporting them and tolerating their antics, they will be on their own and they will be in trouble. The politicians feel their collars becoming tight. In their guilty fear, they can imagine the rope on their necks when someone like Rocker expresses a simple truth which threatens the whole power structure from which they draw their sustenance. The Jewish media bosses made such a fuss about Rocker because they are frightened of the truth. If they were standing on solid ground, they would have nothing to fear. But they aren't standing on solid ground, and they know it. That's why they become hysterical when someone states the truth loudly enough for others to hear. That's why they're demanding John Rocker's head. Think about the significance of the Jewish reaction to John Rocker, and I'm sure that you will agree with me. The other recent news item I'll mention is the announcement by the Jews that they are willing to make peace with their Arab neighbors in the Middle East if we will pay for it. And the bill they are presenting to us is $100 billion. I'll read you the first few lines from the front page of the English language edition of the Jerusalem Post. This was 3 weeks ago, the December 10th issue. I quote, "If all goes as planned, 10 months from now, Palestinian and Israeli negotiators will be scrambling to put the final touches on a permanent peace accord as the government security and finance gurus calculate the cost of peace. The technocrats will add it all up and write down a sum of up to $100 billion, according to some diplomats. They will then look to the U.S. government to bankroll the bulk of the agreement." End quote. The Jerusalem Post article then goes on to complain that not all Americans are inclined to hand over $100 billion to Israel, and that it will require a bit of Jewish pressure to persuade them. The article quotes Alabama Republican Congressman Sonny Callahan, chairman of the House Subcommittee on Foreign Aid. Callahan says, and I quote, "We are happy to give Israel economic assistance, but for goodness sake, $100 billion so there will be an agreement to stop Israelis from killing Palestinians and Palestinians from killing Israelis? The president and Madeleine Albright seem to think there is a money tree here in Washington, and all they have to do is come up with an idea that sounds good and then come back and get the funds." End quote. Callahan went on to say that the Jews may very well get their $100 billion from the American people, but they will have to do it without his vote. The Jerusalem Post quotes other U.S. politicians who are more sympathetic to Jewish needs than Callahan. Florida Republican Mark Foley, for example, says no price is too high to keep Israel happy. Quote, "The price may be astronomical, but the peace process is at a critical juncture. We can spend billions of dollars on an escalating conflict defending Israel, or we can put the money up front for peace." End quote. How many times in the past, when the Jews had their hands out, have we heard that excuse about helping the peace process along? We have financed the Jews' wars against their neighbors, and now we're supposed to finance the military buildup they want so they can feel safe if they make peace with their neighbors. And of course, the Jews are quite confident that Clinton will do whatever he is told in this matter. They believe that before Clinton leaves office, they can get their $100 billion from the American taxpayers even without Congressman Callahan's help. They are a little more worried about continued support after that, however. Even though people close to George Bush have told the Jews not to worry, that Bush will be an obedient servant of Israel, the Jews are concerned that many Americans may be reaching the limit of how much of their blood they are willing to have sucked from them by the Jews. The Jerusalem Post cites with disapproval what it calls a wave of neo-isolationism sweeping the country. You know, we've been coughing up money to support Israel whenever the Jews demanded it. $70 billion in the last 25 years alone, and getting kicked in the teeth in return as the Jews spy on us, steal our military technology, and then sell it to the Chinese, not to mention what they're doing to us in America with their government-enforced programs of diversity and multiculturalism. Let's look a little more closely at this latest demand. They've been hinting at this during most of the year, but the amounts they have talked about have been smaller because these smaller amounts were only to pay for a pullback from occupied territory in one place or another. They never told us what the total bill would be for peace with all their neighbors. For example, they recently told us we would have to cough up $18 billion if we want them to return the Golan Heights to Syria, from whom they stole it 25 years ago, with our help, of course. They have told us that $10 billion of that $18 billion will be used to resettle 17,000 Jewish settlers from the Golan Heights to Israel. Now, you know, these Jewish settlers tend to have larger families than city Jews. But let's just make a very conservative estimate of 3.4 Jews per settler household. That's 5,000 Jewish households needing to be relocated for $10 billion or $2 million per household. Really, the Jews are demanding $2 million from us for each family of 3.4 Jews resettled from stolen Syrian territory to Israel. And these Jewish settlers were settled in the Golan Heights contrary to United Nations resolutions and contrary to requests from the United States government not to settle Jews in illegally occupied Arab land. Now we are supposed to give each of these Jewish families $2 million from our pockets so that they can buy for themselves the sort of palatial accommodations in Israel they believe Jews are naturally entitled to. One thing I will say for these Hebes, they have a lot more brass in them than anyone thought possible. Let's do a little more arithmetic. There are approximately 5 million Jews living in Israel. Let's say 1.5 million Jewish families. Over the 51 years of Israel's existence, Americans have coughed up approximately $100 billion in aid. As I said a moment ago, $70 billion in just the past 25 years. The German people have coughed up approximately the same amount. Now the Jews are aiming for another $100 billion from us before their boy Clinton leaves office a year from now. $300 billion divided among 1.5 million Jewish families comes to an endowment of $200,000 per Jewish family. That doesn't include the interest. And they're constantly whining for more. Oy vey, give us back the gold you took from us during the war. Give us our salaries from the time we worked as slave laborers during the war. Compensate us for this. Compensate us for that. Oy vey, you let the Germans push us into the gas ovens during the war, and you didn't help us. Now you must pay us for that. And if you don't give us $100 billion now, we won't make peace with our neighbors, and it'll be your fault. Well, now the editors of the Jerusalem Post are pretty sure that the politicians in Washington will go along with their latest demands, and I believe they're right about that. But they are worried that the American taxpayers may be getting fed up. They're worried about what they call a wave of neo-isolationism. They are worried that the average American may begin doing a little arithmetic. Americans who are working double shifts now so that they can save money to put their kids through college might wonder why they should pay $2 million for each Jewish family relocated from the Golan Heights. So, will Americans begin doing a little arithmetic? Certainly not by themselves. It's not that they can't do the arithmetic. It's that they won't do it on their own initiative. And even if they did, they would be afraid to draw the right conclusions from it because those conclusions would be politically incorrect. They need someone to set an example for them, someone to tell them that it's all right to be outraged by Israel's claim that it needs $2 million of our money to give each Jewish family which is settled illegally on stolen land in the Golan Heights, just as they need someone like John Rocker to say aloud what they themselves have been thinking about the growing multicultural chaos in America. So now you can see how these two news items we have just discussed are relevant to the question asked by Alfred D. What can we do to break the Jewish stranglehold? The overblown, almost hysterical reaction to John Rocker's simple statement shows us how precarious the Jews themselves understand their situation to be, how afraid they are that someone will awaken us from our trance and we will be able to break their stranglehold. And their astoundingly brazen and greedy grab for another $100 billion from us before Clinton leaves office shows us one of their principal vulnerabilities. They always overreach themselves. They believe that we are so stupid, so gullible, so sheep-like, that they can get away with anything, that we'll never figure it out and never strike back. And even if we do figure it out, they've got the votes to keep us under control. They have debased our electorate to the point that all of the people who are dependent on them for unearned privileges, the feminists, the homosexuals, the non-whites, and the welfare rabble, will be able to outvote us and keep us in our place. It's a strange situation, the Jews greedily grabbing for more and more, and at the same time terrified that their host may wake up and decide to rid himself of them. But then, the Jews are strange creatures, to say the least. And it's clear that the most important thing we can do at this time is to cry out loudly and repeatedly to an ever larger crowd, "Behold, the emperor is naked." We must do deliberately what John Rocker did inadvertently. And we must do it with every medium available to us, not just with magazines for sports fans. And we must talk about more than the freak show the Jews have made of New York City. We must talk about the Jews' open borders immigration policy, the Jews' push to increase the rate of interracial marriage between whites and non-whites, about what the Jews have done to our schools, about the Jewish control of our news and entertainment media, about the Jewish grip on our government, about the Jews' corruption of our politicians, and about the Jews' ongoing theft of our national wealth. Listen, even the most jaded couch potato, even the most thoughtless lemming, can be made to feel indignant about the Jews' plan to steal $2 million of our hard-earned money and give it to each Jewish family now settled illegally in Syria's Golan Heights if we rub his nose in it. We may not have John Rocker's celebrity status, but we are gaining a louder and louder voice. And you can be sure that we will not grovel and apologize the way the celebrities customarily do when the Jews wrap their knuckles for political incorrectness. With the Jews themselves providing us with issues such as their latest demand for $100 billion to make peace with their neighbors and for us to pay for resettling Jewish families in $2 million mansions in Israel, we eventually will have even celebrities speaking out and refusing to apologize. And the house of cards will come tumbling down. That's the answer to Mr. D's question. The Jews are vulnerable. The emperor is naked. We have to speak out without fear or hesitation or apology. We have to set an example. If we do that, others will follow, and our people will be free. Thanks for being with me again today.